What's up, guys? It's Painkiller Early, episode 26, and today we have a special guest. We have Josh Johnson. What is your affiliation, Josh Johnson?
Yeah, how'd you get on here?
Do what now?
How'd you get on the podcast? What makes you special?
I am an Iraq war veteran with legit stories.
There it is. So he is a badass Marine who's kicked in many doors, and we're bringing him on the podcast. Should be cool.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that one. Looking forward to some of his stories.
Yeah.
You always run into, like, the guys from Vietnam who don't like to talk about the stories. And, I mean, I can't really speak for – obviously, I have no war experience. But I hate to even say this, but I feel like I got a little bit of a sociopathic nature. And I can do things, and I just don't feel them. Now, I'm not a serial killer. I'm not going to go around, like, murdering my neighbors. But, for example, the other night, a dog got hit at the end of my driveway. And it was crippled, okay? The dog's back is broken. It's laying there in pain. I shot it 3 times in the head, and I didn't feel anything. I feel like I could go to war. I could see someone die. I could kill someone and not feel a thing.
You'd love my Uncle Jerry, then. My Uncle Jerry, he was a howitzer man in Vietnam, and that's why he can't hear now. But he'd tell me stories about after they laid an enemy area, he had to go clean the bodies up out of the area so somebody else would wander through that field.
Yeah. So he'd be putting people down.
Oh, like, yeah. Were they ever just wounded?
Oh, definitely. The howitzer?
Yeah, they'd be two pieces sometimes.
Well, if they were within 100 meters of the impact zone, there were no survivors.
Like, he had to clean, like he had to pick somebody's arm up, and then he had to go and pick another guy's upper torso up and move them out of the field so buzzards wouldn't get away because it was right there near the encampment.
So I want to talk to Josh for a second. So Josh, the stream, and I know a lot of people listen, it's on iPod, they don't see the stream, but the stream is like chanting fake. So Josh,
really?
can you tell us how do you kick in a door?
Well, there's really nothing to it. You just kind of run up to it and karate chop it, I guess, front kick. Or you can walk up to it and do what's called a mule kick, put your back to the door, kick it. You typically want to kick it. If it's a door with a door locking doorknob, door handle, that kind of stuff, you actually want to kick the handle because it breaks the locking mechanism and the door will open after that. If it doesn't swing open, then you can lock the locking mechanism is broken and then you can just open the door, push it open, and then you're good.
If you kick the door in, are you the first one in?
And you start running and screaming?
No, if I kick the door in, the guys that are right behind me are the ones that are going in, kicking, you know, screaming and yelling and throwing in flashbangs.
What does the point man carry, like, as a weapon?
Well, I was a point man, and I carried an M16 with an aim point sight.
What does that mean? What's an aim point sight?
You guys see the little ACOG scopes on all the Modern Warfare games. It's basically that, but without magnification power.
Okay. Oh, okay. Did the tactical shotguns, has that ever come to play when making an entry?
Oh, yeah. I've busted a couple locks with those. They're really fun.
You use special rounds to, like, doorbuster rounds, or is that...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At first, I found out that a standard buckshot won't do it.
Yeah.
Then you got to load I called it the big lead brick.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what it's made of, but it's just like this. It's basically like the size of a brick, and it just goes out and just destroys the entire door mechanism.
So what are they like when you first see them? Like, so there you are. You kick the door right by the locking mechanism. It opens up. All your buddies run past you into the room. Like, if you're an Iraqi sitting there watching, America's Funniest Home Videos, and these guys bust through your door, like, how does this go down?
Typically what we did was... By the time I got into the room, the women and children were usually crying,
mm-hmm.
and any male that was over the age, or appeared to be over the age of 18, was flat on their face with a bag over their head and flexi cuffed.
Nice.
Yeah, and that was all within 20 seconds.
And so you're the last in the room because you're
typically the person that kicks the door open is the last one in.
And why did you keep the door open? He told us earlier, like, we kind of interviewed him, and apparently he's like a big human, so he'd often get the job of door kicking, which also means he's last in the room. Is that my own target there?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I got a question. You ever kicked a door that was well made and it didn't break?
Yes.
What happens in that situation? Because they obviously know you're there now.
You got to knock.
Yeah. I knocked with about a pound worth of C4.
Oh, yeah. That's nothing. You should see the pump.
Yeah. It took the door off the hinges and half of the front wall of the house.
Oh.
I mean, how big are you?
About 6'3".
Okay.
In my better days, I was about 190. Now I've gained a little weight since then.
Happens to the best of us.
How often would an entry immediately turn into a firefight? Like I imagine that the average entry is just going in and, you know, doing what you just described. But how often do you go in and there's guys that immediately reach for a gun?
I've only had it happen twice out of the hundreds of doors I kicked open, and the guy was maybe 5 feet from his gun, and it's literally so fast that he has no idea what to think. Like, you kick the door open and you're screaming and yelling at the guy. It takes him about 4 seconds to realize what's going on, and then he'd typically go for his gun, but by that time, you know, I've already, myself or somebody else, has their hands on the guy, and he's got a face full of concrete.
So you never had to shoot in a door?
That's not saying I've never shot at anybody. I'm just saying I've never had to kick open a door and spray and pray, as we used to say.
We still do here in the YouTube world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pop the steady aim on. You just throw the stun in, go in and take them all out. I get four pieces all the time. Yeah.
So do you learn anything from my YouTube videos, like how to run, say, a lowercase J with an X pattern overlap?
Have you ever gotten your buddies and been like, hey guys, come over here. You need to see this. Control the engagement. Watch this guy do it.
Watch how they spawn trap.
See, they got them pinned down over there. See, that's just what we need to do here. We need to get the spawn trapping thing here.
So, yeah, if things start going really well for you, do they drop airstrikes and bring in helicopters?
I'll tell you, I had airstrikes called in relatively close to my position at least twice, and it was by far the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Do they say danger close in real life?
Yes, they do.
Oh,
it nice. That it comes from there. That's where it comes from, is military. Danger close, you know, CASEVAC.
You ever had eardrums popped?
I had a 600-pound dropped about 100 meters from where I was, so yeah. I was behind a berm after we had invaded Iraq the first time in 2003, and we were right outside of a GOS, which is a gas oil separation plant, and my platoon commander called in an airstrike. But instead of calling it, instead of having the bombs drop on where the target he wanted, he accidentally called it in on the position we were in. Yeah. So we had 15 seconds to run 150 meters.
Oh, he was immediately like, I fucked up, run.
Yeah, that was basically, he's like, shit, wait a minute. My bad, I got that backwards. And we're like, you fucker.
So basically, if the way I understand it, when you're calling in air support, you give them two coordinates, right? Your own and then the enemy's, and one is supposed to come first, and he...
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You give your target where you want the bombs to drop, you tell that first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go through their little spiel and tell you, okay, well, what do you want? You say, I want, you know, a bomb dropped. I want a fire mission, which is, you know... like firing missiles. I want suppression, which is like machine gun fire. And then you tell them where you're at. And then if you're within, depending on what the ordinance is, 100 meters, 200 meters, they're like, you realize that's danger close. Affirmative, danger close. You know, and then they're like, okay.
Just for the record, Josh, no one in the stream thinks you're fake anymore.
Well, I could care less if they did. If they didn't believe I was real, that there's a YouTube video of on the internet with me being hurt, and it says it has my name and it has my unit.
Link.
So you got a purple heart. How did you get a purple heart?
Actually, it's kind of a weird story. Nobody really knows what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it involves me being ridiculously close to something exploding. Apparently, literally nobody knows what happens. I mean, people say it was a mortar, a 50-millimeter, 60-millimeter mortar that exploded like 10 feet from me. Other people say it was a rocket-propelled grenade.
But it was most definitely the enemy did something.
Yes.
It wasn't, like, friendly.
Well, it could have been friendly, for all I know.
Gomer Pyle might have dropped his nade and ran for it.
Yeah.
Did you see those guys shoot that at you?
So you went to Iraq and Afghanistan. What do
yes.
you spend most of your time doing? Like, I have this notion that you, I don't know, spend like 18 hours a day waiting for stuff and not doing anything.
Well, the days when we were active and we did have stuff to do, they were long days. Waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, doing city sweeps for 20 hours.
What do you do city sweeps for?
In Ramadi especially, we set up sections of the city, and my battalion would roll in and say, the company I was in, we would be given specific areas to search, you know, 20 square blocks of the city. And they'd say, okay, sweep every building, you know, in this section, and when you're done, if you get done in the time, then continue your sweep east, west, north, south, all that good stuff.
Like, I don't understand what a sweep is. Like, you just looking for yeah. people who look bad?
You basically, you knock on doors, you look for anything suspicious. You see wires sticking out of the road. Yeah, you go in the opposite direction of it. But you knock on doors, you walk in. And 9 times out of 10, when we were knocking on doors and saying, hey, do you have any weapons? The people invite us in. They'd say, yeah, these are the weapons we have. They had more than one AK-47, then, you know, we'd grab it because they're only allowed to have one.
Mm-hmm.
It was one AK-47 and one pistol.
Who is this that's the citizens?
The citizens, yes.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I want to live there.
Really?
You have an AK-47.
Yeah, but they're allowed to have them there. Mine's on the down low. That's why I can't shoot it.
You're allowed to have them here, too.
You're allowed to have them here. It,
you just got to pay the federal tax on it.
Yeah, enjoy paying that.
It's $200 a year. I'm pretty sure you can afford it.
Yeah, McDuck.
I ain't got to pay a federal tax. Mine's semi-automatic. I just stuck a bunch of...
Well, is it the MAC-90, the civilian variation, or is it the AK-47?
I guess it's the civilian variation. What I ended up doing is I took staples and put it into the receiver of the gun and made it fully automatic.
Oh, Jesus.
I wouldn't have said that out loud.
Yeah.
What the fuck are they going to do to me? They're going to look me down? Fuck them.
They might.
I got 3 or 4 more guns. I got a bar that's supposed to be semi-automatic, but I can belt feed it. What do you want?
Oh, man. Nice.
Did you put a staple in it to make it full auto?
Yeah. What it is there, it's basically got this C-hook on it, and when you press the trigger, this thing opens. It opens up the channel so the firing pin can go through. What I did is I held the channel open with staples. So when I hold the trigger down, it just keeps it open.
Hmm.
Yeah, I did something similar to an SKS with a little piece of sheet metal. But I take it back out once I have some fun with it.
Hmm. I mean, so it ain't no different than, like, bump firing.
Josh, how long did you serve?
4 years.
4 years. And you served in both Iraq and Afghanistan? How different are they? Like,
Iraq is really sandy and just... hot and nasty, miserable, and Afghanistan is hot, sandy, miserable, with a lot of hills.
I see the difference.
Yeah. The hills.
I mean, the people dress different, they speak a different language, it's...
How about the leadership? Is, like, the culture different? Is there a different...
Oh, it's a whole lot different. In Afghanistan, it's all tribal, and...
But, like, I mean, in the military, you know, did you find the chain of command to behave much differently in Iraq versus Afghanistan? Was it different for you?
No, they were assholes, regardless.
I got a question. All the city sweep you talk about doing, why are y'all still having insurgents problems?
Because the insurgency is It's this is a hard question to answer. I had a news reporter ask me about this once.
Here's what I'm looking at. I'm like, you sweep the entire fucking town. Looks like you'd have no more insurgents.
Well, yeah, a lot of times, though, they would bury stuff in their backyard, and since it's all sand, you know, you can't, like, walk in somebody's backyard or in their courtyard and say, oh, look, that's a fresh dirt pile over there. You know, it's all dirt piles. You know, I mean, and people just, on different days, you catch somebody on a, you know, just a, having a bad day, you know, oh, well, I got hassled by the Americans today, so they go home and bust out their AK-47 and, you know, pop off a couple rounds in the air because they're mad, and then next thing you know, they're getting arrested for terrorism. You know, just people just have bad days. And, yeah.
So how about you? I mean, you're over there, you're away from your family, you're kind of alone, but I guess with your friends. Do you have bad days over there? Did you ever, like, start questioning your decision-making process?
Well, basically every day you're over there is a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, in Ramadi where I was, you could literally die just going to take a shit. I mean, they drop mortars 6 hours a day, every day onto our position. You know, it was completely random. And, you know, there'd be days where...
they just set up in their backyard and like, I hope this hits that campment.
See, the way they would work it was... I'm not encouraging this, but I'm going to say it anyways. A lot of the Mujahideen fighters over there created mortar tubes out of PVC pipes with a nail on the bottom of it.
Yeah, or they used shotgun barrels and shit.
Right, yeah. And what they would do is they would put the mortar rounds in a freezer. Okay, and then they would stick it, because, you know, stuff freezes and expands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. They would stick it over the tube of the mortar tube, and then they'd walk off. Well, as it starts to heat up, weather warms up the metal, it starts shrinking, and then it drops in, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, I saw that. Go ahead,
I'm sorry.
I was watching a documentary about, I want to say, Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. I guess it's where everybody goes through. And they were talking about, they were getting, like, missile attacks, and they were saying that they were using kitchen timers on those. They're like, we're not even going to return fire because the guy who, you know, the position that came from, you know, the guys left there like an hour ago probably.
Yeah, that stuff's been sitting there for days. You know, yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, there at one point we had a Chechenian-trained local that was trained by a Chechenian sniper. And he was good. He was taking pot shots from like half a mile at people like walking to the chow hall to get something to eat. You know, I was on the phone with my parents one night and standing up next to a building and sitting there. Hey, Mom, how's it going? Crack! Bullet crack like right next to my head. And I just laid down, you know. What was it? Oh, that was nothing.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, don't worry about it. It's just make you not sleep tonight. And they're like, no, seriously. I'm like, okay. It was a sniper. And they're like, oh, well, that's just great. And it's like, well, they missed, didn't they? They're like, well, where would it have hit? And I'm like, my head.
I'd be like, well, I mean, he is reloading, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it literally, I'd have to say 5 inches from my head.
Wow.
And the closest building that would have been a proper elevation to where I was at least half a mile away. At night.
Yeah, so the night part is the impressive part.
Yeah. Lucky it wasn't Grizz.
Yep. Half a mile.
That's what I told him when he missed.
Oh, man.
You ain't Grizz, baby.
Yeah, that's 800 yards. That's a pretty serious shot.
Yeah. I was impressed. Not a lot of stuff impressed me back then, but that guy, missing. yeah, about that. That was when I started wearing my body armor just all over the place. It used to be on the base, you didn't have to, when you walked outside, you didn't have to have your body armor and stuff. Yeah, after that, it went with me everywhere.
Yeah, because it was heavily affected. Yeah, it'd be completely effective, though, you know, from that range.
Well, especially definitely. if it was 7.62, too, so it would have... I would have been dead before I hit the ground. So
flattened your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I've always called bullshit on the JFK thing. That motherfucker hit him with a 30 caliber round. There wouldn't be no sneezing up blood. It would have flattened his skull out.
Dude, what are you talking about? The back of his head came off.
Yeah, man. There is. That looked like Kyle's pumpkin.
Yeah, his brains are in Jackie's lap.
I mean,
watch that shit in slow mo. The whole back of Kennedy's head comes off, and a chunk of brain as big as your fist dangles out.
If the back of his head comes off, he got shot in the front.
Mm-hmm. That's what I keep saying.
Well, that's the nature of the bullets. I mean, it goes in small and comes out big. So
yeah, so he had to get shot in the face, and the way they got it stolen is he shot him from the book suppository behind him.
He said it. He said it. I knew he'd say it. I was waiting on him. He called it the book suppository. I was going to talk about this until he said it. I knew he'd say it. I called that as soon as JFK got brought out. I'm like, I got to get him to say where they shoot the shot from.
Oh, God. Kyle's a master. He's like a Jedi.
No, I love that movie, though. I love the JFK movie, and I've seen a lot of, like, I've seen, you know, on Discovery Channel, they break that thing down, and as far as how the bullet came in and everything, and I don't have it all on the top of my head right now, but I was thoroughly convinced that it could have been done by one shooter in the video that I watched. Though, thinking about me trying to do what he did, fire those three shots in that small amount, I want to say 14 seconds, but it's probably less. It's probably much less.
Well, how far away was he?
100 yards or less. Like 80 meters, I want to say.
And it was how big of a round? 7.62?
It's a 30 caliber, about a 30-06.
He had a Mauser or something. Yeah.
No, he had a $10 rifle from Sears and Roebuck.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. At 100 meters, that bullet should have just went in and out.
Yeah,
with
boom.
As high a caliber it was, it shouldn't have splattered.
We don't know what kind of ammo like was in that thing. It's 1960s era ammo, and God knows this.
Yeah, like the ammo's changed since 1960, Kyle.
Well, I mean,
Christ, when I was in Iraq, I was still using ammo from the Cold War.
Oh my God. Well, it depends. Was it an FMJ? Was it a Spitzer? A hollow point? Was it? I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's true. If it was a hollow point, I guess yeah, it would have made a messy mess.
I didn't even know 30-06 came in all that. I thought it was all those deer rounds that sort of blunt.
Oh, thing. Man. You can reload a 30-06. I could. There are literally, I'm going to say at least, I could probably name 8 different types of rounds you can shoot out of the 30-06, just bullet makeups. You can shoot Spitzers. There's, you know, you can put the boat tail variation on every type of front. You can have the Nozzlers with the ballistic tips, hollow points, Spitzers. You can have the FMJ. You can change the core of the bullet. I mean, there's a lot of different makeups that you can.
Well, that and nowadays they have what's called slap rounds, which I don't know if you guys have seen those, but they may be predominantly for 50 cal, but they're nasty.
I'm not. What's the makeup of the bullet? What
it's
is it?
It's made of tungsten and like a plastic type rubber.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and when
all
the
I
bullet
got is 50 BMG,
hey, that works. You can shoot those slap rounds through your. Your BMG, if you can get a hold of them. I mean, it's made from tungsten. It's basically as sharp as a needle, and they're used for anti-tanks.
Yeah.
Huh. Tanks have, what, 7.5 inches of sloped armor?
Well, it depends. Well, whose tank are we talking about here?
This stuff's designed to penetrate tanks. The reactive armor of the new tanks now that we have.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking about a Russian T-90 tank here, because those guys
would
are fucked.
Slice through it. I mean, it wouldn't even slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, the armor now, they got the...
Yeah,
they have the exploding shells that take away the effect of the armor unless you pierce through it. Now the reactive armor does what?
It's basically... It's almost... it's like a layered kind of effect. It kind of looks
it's supposed
like...
supposed to absorb the explosion of the bullet so it doesn't weaken the structure.
It doesn't really absorb it. It just deflects it. And it's typically... They use them against... they're mostly put on the tanks now because of the RPGs. Because if you shot an RPG at that tank from an angle, it deflected the armor, especially if it was anti-tank. But if you shot at it from the side, you know, like at a 90 degree, you're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, the way a shaped projectile works, it's not, people think that it's the explosion or it's the actual penetration. It's the injection of a large amount of liquid metal into that tank and the gases that are caused from it.
Exactly. And it's
what's killing people.
It's, yes, the gases that are following it in.
Yep.
The, what did they call that? Percussive damage, I think's the term.
You know, I've heard, I had 5,000 people on my site say that you can miss with a 50 cal and still kill somebody.
No, no.
Yes, you can.
What?
No.
Yes. The shockwave alone from the 50
caliber.
You're
full of shit. I own a 50 caliber rifle, and I've missed something with it less than an inch, and it didn't even affect it.
I don't know what to tell you. I've seen it with my own eyes, somebody being shot at by a 50 caliber rifle, and the bullet passed within 6 feet of him, and it ripped his arm off.
What? 6 feet? You're full of shit.
I've seen it.
6 feet.
6 feet.
I mean, maybe 6 inches, I would believe you.
I can settle this. Don't worry, guys. I'll Google it.
I'm on ahead of you.
It doesn't work, Woody. The fact is, unless the bullet hits you, you're not going to take any of the energy or mass away from it.
Yeah, but the shockwave diminishes over distance. Like, up close? Like yeah.
Yeah. The shockwave's initial gas is blowing out of the barrel from a small and confined area. Over distance, that bullet wouldn't have none of that.
It's also a very large projectile traveling at a very high rate of speed.
It's 661 grains. I mean, it's maybe four times the size of a 30 caliber.
Well,
it's not that much bigger.
The bullets that you're getting are 600 grains. The ones that they were shooting are like 700 plus.
Either or. It would never take your arm off at 6 feet, much less 6 inches.
According to the internet, Wings is right.
I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, I'm serious. I've shot fruit and missed on purpose to see if it would do that. It doesn't. And a pumpkin, a 30 cal would destroy, like a watermelon or pumpkin, it would obliterate it. Small cats, gone, incinerated. But if you miss them, they cool. They're going to eat their kit
you
chicken.
You know what? Dude, this would make a great video.
This is your next YouTube video. Here you get Wings. Get yourself a watermelon, set up a paper target behind it, and miss it by, say, 6 inches at 100 yards.
Sure. Yeah.
I could do that.
I don't have a 50 cal, so I have no
idea.
The biggest thing I
What kind of sight do you, scope do you have for it?
I have a 3x9x40.
What brand?
It's come stock on it. I think it's a Leopold.
Yeah, Leopold's
the one to have.
That's all I've got.
I paid $6,800 for it right out of Barrett Arms. It's a Model 95. It holds five. It's got a 5-round magazine, come with a Leopold scope, and it came with a bipod, weighs a pound and a half, and a carrying case.
I got about four of those Leopold. I think they're, I want to say 4.5 by 14 by 50 millimeters. I like the 50 millimeter scopes because you can turn them down to 4.5 and you can get decent night vision. I'm not talking about like seeing in pitch black, but it's better than your naked eye in low light conditions.
Hey, Kyle, Wings has a $7,000 rifle. You sure you're going to put, I mean, can you hang?
Dude, my 50 cal is my most expensive rifle. My target rifle is over 10 grand. I got done to it.
I got
That's the one I'm going to use to shoot 900 feet with. I got a fluted bull barrel Remington 700 SPS. I got a lot done to that rifle.
A scope costs that much?
You have a scope that costs that much? Do you really?
I've got, I wish I had one in the room with me. They're in the other room in the vault.
My rifle was $500, and I can get a quarter from 100 yards.
My rifle coming out the store was $714 after taxes, but I've put about 10 grand worth of work into it.
Okay, so you've all right. My rifles are about $2,600 out of the store, and there's a 6 month waiting period. And I got four of those. And
which ones are those?
Remington 40XBs. It's similar to the R700, but it's a tricked out target rifle that Remington makes, and it's very heavy. Right? I want to say that.
What's the twist on it?
You got the 8-lug scope bolts on it. You got the free floating barrel, glass pack, bull barrel, fluted.
Not everyone wants to hear about the twist rate on Kyle's rifle. Goodness gracious.
The only reason why I ask is because the fewer the numbers, the better.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. I don't know off the top of my head.
Typically, the best one would be, from what I've been told, between 6 and 8.
Shoot. Yeah. The bolt in my rifle was about $600. It's an octagon bolt designed for the bull barrel.
Nice.
So it has more locking lugs on it.
So you play games, Josh?
I do every now and then.
What's your game?
I mean, I'm playing Medal of Honor right now, which I would have to say, in my opinion, because of the realism factor of that game, it beats the single-player mode of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 out of the water with the realism.
Do you play multiplayer much?
Maybe a couple times a week.
Okay.
A couple hours a day.
So you're mostly, I guess, a COD multiplayer guy, and you're grabbing Medal of Honor and running through the campaign right now?
Yeah, I'm kind of filling it out, seeing if I want to buy it.
Oh, you have it rented?
Yeah, I wasn't going to go out and spend $60 on it.
Not all of us are FPS McDuck.
God damn it.
FPS Kyle money, FPS Kyle money.
He wants to make that a rap song.
I can see Lil Wayne saying that.
What? Get Lil Wayne to do it.
FPS Kyle money. Oh, yeah, won't it?
Freaking awesome. So let's talk Medal of Honor. I've had a bunch of guys ask me to bring up Medal of Honor in the podcast. So I did a review on it. I watched my own review like 3 times today. I think I did a good job. There are a lot of things that are great about that game, but as it stands today, like, I don't think we've figured out how to navigate the maps to get around the camping.
Yeah. Let me address this one first.
Mm-hmm.
I like this game a lot, mainly because I'm not as good as I possibly can be. I don't know if that's a selling point for a lot of people, but if a game challenges me to do well in it, I'll keep playing it. That's why I played Reach for a whole month, which I failed horribly at. But I wanted to be good at the game, and it made me want to play it, if you understand. Like, when I go to a Call of Duty game, it's like, yeah, I'm 5-6 KD, whatever. Call of Duty's easy as fuck to do well in. But, Medal of Honor, it's a whole new setup. It's more of like a tactical shooter than like a regular shooter. You got to pretty much, you work in the environment, plus you got the Twitch aspect. And the biggest problem I've had with it so far is the fact they never show you what your connection is.
That's your problem?
Yeah, that's my problem. If I'm in a shitty server, I want something to blame.
Oh,
I want to know I'm in a shitty server. I want to know I got one bar.
Don't you just normally blame the guy with the lowest KD?
No, I mean, because everybody on my team has low KD. I'm usually in the low KD section in those servers too. Like,
my biggest problem is the getting shot and not learning from it. Like, that's the hardest part in Medal of Honor for me. You know, half of my deaths. Well, usually half of my deaths, if the team's not winning, will be from like mortar strikes and things like that. The ones that aren't, it's very rare that I lose like a gunfight where the guy and I, you know, go face to face and I lose like that. Mostly, you know, I just, all right, oh, insta-death, what do you know? You know, now I'm dead. And then you see there's a sniper, you know, and that's all they tell you. You got shot by a sniper, there's a little screen that goes in front of you. Halo has, like, a spectator cam, and while it's not a kill cam, it gives you a clue as to who did it. And, you know, Call of Duty, of course, has a kill cam. You know exactly what that guy was, you know, seeing and doing when he got the kill. In Medal of Honor, there's nothing. All they do is tell you what weapon took you down. So oftentimes it's a sniper from who knows where, somewhere far away, and it's hard to learn. It's hard to learn to get better. They don't give you any feedback.
See, what I question is, I put 5 rounds to a guy, and he kills me in 2, but I know he didn't kill me in 2. I know I just seen the 2 rounds. That's the ones that killed me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how bad was that a connection death? Did I do something wrong? Did he obviously already outshoot me? I just didn't see it based on the connection. These are the things I ask myself when I'm playing.
I remember when I first started playing COD 4, and, you know, so to keep me, I'm terrible at this point. And I would get some kills that I thought were pro. Like, you know, I got on target, I outshot the guy, whatever. But I would get so many deaths that I fully recognized were noob. You know, here I am looking down the scope. Some guy comes along, sees me from the side. I'm still looking down my scope, and he hoses me down with his bullets. And I'm like, man, you know, what kind of target was I? I must have looked like a gift to him when he spotted me. Those kill cams helped me get better so much. Every game should have kill cams. They're huge in helping you learn to play better. And Medal of Honor doesn't have anything even close to that. It has good points. I talked about it in my review. I love the way killstreaks work. I absolutely love that you sort of get a choice between like one that helps your team and one that helps your personal kills, which can also help your team. I mean, it helps you win. I love that you get points for objective stuff, you know, so they're not strictly killstreaks anymore. That idea was brilliant. The sound, the graphics, they're fantastic in this game. The controls even feel pretty tight. The guns, the recoil on the guns are perfect. They're very similar in my mind to COD 4, you know, so if the guy's far away and you burst fire, then that's the right way to be. If the guy's up close and you just hose him down, then that's the right way to be. So they did a lot right in this game. But what's wrong is, you know, the maps, they kind of promote camping. You can't go, you can't really travel around the map without just getting, you know, knocked off somewhere. And it's hard to get better because you don't know who knocked you off. That's my thought on it.
Yeah, I watched your video. And I watched your Wings video. And I want the game now. And I was going to, this is last night, I was about to go out and buy the game. I was talking to Socrates in a party, and I was like, let me see what Wings is doing. I joined Wings' party. He's playing Battlefield Bad Company 2. I'm like, why aren't you playing Medal of Honor? He's like, it's only got 3 guns. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's funny, because right. Wings loved it in his review. And,
yeah.
And he seems to be enjoying it now when you talk to him on the podcast. But I play with him every night, and he rage quits in frustration and curses out everyone in earshot. And so I promise you, he doesn't love it all the time. Right, Wings?
Yeah. Like I said, I reevaluated my gameplay since we last played.
Yeah, so you said that before the podcast. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I'll talk about it. It's going to give away my next 2 videos. But I created a series of videos because what I was doing, I was having well, initially, when I first bought the game, everybody sucked at the game. That means I could use the clipping spots and use just my normal Call of Duty knowledge to best them. You know, clip this guy here and kill him as he comes through the choke point. Well, eventually people caught on to that shit and they started doing it. And then it's a clip versus clip engagement, and you win and lose those 50% of the time. I no longer have the big advantage. And that's where my game started going downhill. Went from a 4.5 KD player to a 2.8 KD player. And I'm like, man, this is just going to keep tumbling right on down until I'm a 2KD player. You know what I'm talking about? And so I stopped and reevaluated my game. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? What I got to do better? What I can do this? And what I deciphered is I was basically not using my environment the best it could be. I was basically blindly brushing to a section of the map to try to get some kind of clipping point over the guy instead of working my way to there slowly and using my teammates as an advantage. In Call of Duty, I like to use, like, when I'm in an area that's saturated with teammates, I like to use them as, like, guinea pigs. Like, they look, they do the line of sight, and they get shot, and I learn from their mistake, because I see, oh, they got shot there. I'm not going to go that way. You know, I don't try to outclip people. What I basically do is just learn how to use trying to use the cover and the smoke grenade better, and basically pick them off without just going blindly to a choke point. Yeah, that makes sense?
I'm trying to learn routes better so I can flank them on the side. I would love to have success with that game style, and sometimes I do, but mostly I don't. And I don't use the smoke grenades enough, so next time I'm on, I'm going to try that and see if it can do the trick.
And another thing I've been doing is when I'm moving with my team, I make sure I know where the arrows are pointing, and I try to look in a different position than they are. That makes sense.
Yep. Like, yeah, I was going to say, the radar in that game is really good. So it works. Let me address this. Some guys say not to compare shooters to Call of Duty, and my answer to you is bite me.
It's the benchmark. Yeah, it's the benchmark.
Really? They say all these things are completely different. Right. Modern shooters that take place in a gritty environment have nothing in common with each other. Dude, we all speak Call of Duty. It's okay to translate reviews into Call of Duty. Anyway, the radar in Medal of Honor works a lot like it does in Call of Duty. When you shoot, you appear on it. It shows sort of the map contour to help you get around. And I really like it. I think the radar is just about perfect. The UAV sweep is a lot slower. But that's okay. It's a different game. It's a slightly different dynamic. It's all good.
Yeah, I like watching the videos. I got a feeling I'd pick the game up and hate it, though. Whatever.
Well, if you like running around, you're not going to like this game.
I mean, you know, like I like the post gameplay where I mostly like move around a good bit, but like honestly, I can sit in one spot for an entire game and go 8-0 and I'm happy. I don't give a shit. It's just having that mental thing.
You might like this game.
It's like, yep, I just fucked you guys. I stayed here in this back building. Every one of you that came back here died. I didn't die.
It's a really, really tactical shooter. I mean, literally, like, if you fuck up, you die.
Yeah.
If you move around, you die. You got to make sure you clear an area out. You got to make sure the smoke grenade goes in and make sure the frag grenade goes in. There is no flashbangs, and there's lots of camping. It's 12 on 12 in small maps like Domination or Shipment.
See, that's where I think DICE gets... Did DICE make this game?
They made the multiplayer.
Yeah, this is where DICE gets it wrong. They don't know how many players to set against each other, because in Squad TDM and Bad Company 2, you got like four teams of four. Now, I know they want to go with that whole, you know, okay, you got a support guy and a recon guy and this and an engineer, but fuck all that. No, it's either 8-on-8 or 6-on-6. Don't give me this four teams of four shit. Like each team needs to have a side of the map, and they're pushing toward the center, and that's where we meet, and that's where we fight. And if I completely kill all of you, then it moves around a little bit. But the 4-on-4 is just a shit fest. And then, like what you're describing, 12-on-12 in a smallish map, and as cluttered as those maps appear to be in the videos I've seen, it just seems like a shit fest where you've got people everywhere.
So there's two team things in Medal of Honor that I really hope they can fix. This is something that they could address with a patch. One is, you can only join with a party of four. So it's 8-on-8, but you can only join with fours. And, you know, like if you're a Huppet guy or if you're a YouTube guy, then you often have more than three friends you want to play with, and you can't. And then the other problem is, even if you put together a party of four, you know, you and three other guys, then it might stick you on different teams. You're joining as a party, and it splits you up. Now, I've heard, and Sasspin Jr. has mentioned in two videos, that if you set your clan tag to match, it keeps you together, but we tested that out, and it's not working for us. So there's nothing we can do that seems to keep us together.
Yeah. That's something Call of Duty does very well, is the, well, it didn't for a long time, because it was screwed up terribly in Modern Warfare 2 for the first few months, but, you know, going in with six players, all six of you are on the same team, you all play together, you can play together for 3-4 hours straight, and nothing bad happens as long as the host doesn't drop, and it works well, and I wish Halo were like that, honestly, so that you could, like, end up playing that same group of noobs in Halo over and over.
Right.
I wish they would bring the skill system back in Halo. I mean, Halo 3, I'm sure it's gone. Because in Halo 3, I got put on with players about my skill level all the time. But I popped in Halo last night, and I got put on a team of four randoms that we just all came together and ended up putting on a team versus a full party of four. You wouldn't have that in Halo 3.
Yeah, I found that true, too. Like, when, so I was on vacation when Halo came out, which means that I was about 2 weeks behind, you know, the Reach world. When I started playing, for weeks, I was the lowest ranked person in every lobby. I was constantly matched with people who were better than me. And it's not like I was going even all the time. You know, I'm -5 game after game after game, and everyone's more experienced. I'm thinking there's millions of people playing this game. There's no one at my level. You know, why was it always setting me up with people who were better than me every game? Maybe the skill system is gone.
I mean, yeah, like these guys that we went up against, they were way better than me. I mean, angle play, they beat my ass. And they were way better than the guy on the bottom of my team. He went like 3-17.
Yeah, man. And you know, so sometimes I'd be with friends, and then I can understand, you know, like if I'm playing with, you know, a lot of my friends are really good at Halo, like an Onslaught or a Bendro or whatever. And if I'm with them, Hutch, then I'm expecting to get good teammates. I get that, you know, I'm going to be overmatched because that's who I'm rolling with, guys who would overmatch me. But even when I played alone, I still was getting overmatched sometimes. And the Halo's skill system was, like, legendary for putting you with people of your own level. And in Reach, I didn't observe it to be all that legendary.
Hey, Josh, you got to kind of butt in here. You just got to kind of start talking.
I haven't played the multiplayer on any of those games. I don't have an Xbox, so I haven't played Halo. Right. Actually, I've never played Halo.
I got a question for Kyle. Let's talk about what you were doing before the podcast tonight.
Well, I got a call. My dad called me and said that he had that there were some cows out. I went over there to help him get the cows back into the back end.
So how many cows are we talking about here?
Well, there were only four out.
Mm-hmm.
we've got quite a few more than that, but four of them had escaped somehow. You never know how, because...
So do you live on a farm?
No, I don't. I live by the lake, but the farm isn't too far away from where I live.
And you or your father somehow run or own the farm?
We do.
Okay.
So we went to find them. We found them, and I go to open the gate, and he's not supposed to let them run past him. And so I go to open the gate, and they run past him into the woods and take off. And he ends up getting behind him. Long story short, they run through this guy's yard. So my dad drives through the guy's yard chasing the cows. And
is he in a truck or like an ATV?
Yeah, he's in a truck. And you've got to keep in mind, this isn't a yard like in somebody's like suburban neighborhood. This is like we're in the country here. This is like a yard. And and the black guy that lives there is like, "Hey, hey, you can't be driving through my yard. You're trespassing."
So this seems fairly reasonable at this point. Like, if you drove through my yard, I wouldn't like it.
Oh, you mean your lawn you never take care of? I'm sure you mess it up.
Yeah, only I'm allowed to drive on my grass.
You'd have to be there. There's three cows in the guy's backyard.
Okay.
So, gotta get the cows out. So he's chasing them, and the guy starts yelling. So, that guy got cussed out, and at one point my dad's like, the guy's like, "This is private property." He's like, my dad's like, "Well, it won't be private property much fucking longer. You don't pay your goddamn bills, the bank's about to foreclose on your mortgage." The guy's like, "How do you know about that?" He's like, "Because they're calling my house, want me to let you know." So I just let And so we keep on with the cows, and he's like, "I'm not done with him. I'm going back."
So he went back. So how'd that guy fare against Chuck Norris?
It didn't get physical, apparently. I guess the guy ended up apologizing quite a bit. He went back and cussed him out some more. But at one point, this fucking cow trampled the shit out of me.
Really?
Knocked me down. Yeah, knocked me. Yeah, that's what I said in the chat. I was like, fucking 800-pound heifer just trampled the shit out of me.
Did I ever tell the story where I tried to ride a cow?
No.
No. So, look, I don't have anywhere near Kyle's cow experience. Like, nowhere near Kyle's cow experience. But we're on this off-roading trip in Crozet, Virginia, if any of you guys know the place. And someone says they'll pay me $100 if I can ride a cow. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'm down. And there's no downside to it, right? Like, he's not paying, not like I pay him $100 if I don't ride it. He's just saying, $100, go ride a cow. So I'm trying, first of all, to catch the cow. And the cows are, like, keeping an eye on me, real subtle.
Yeah,
They act like they're just looking at the grass and chewing and ignoring you, but those freaking, they're sneaky like that.
Yeah, they know what's going on.
They've got eyes on the side of their heads, and you can't really sneak up on them from any direction. They've got this huge peripheral view. So so what I would do is walk, but not toward them, like just, like I was on a hurry to get past them. Deliberately, you know, sort of like a speed nerdy walk, and then a quick dart towards them, you know, like full on sprint, trying to get to the cow. But cows are fast, like a lot faster than you'd think they were. You'd think they're like fat chicks, and you can catch them easily. So I kept doing it and kept doing it, and everyone's laughing at me because they're like from the country. They know that you can't ride cows. But this is like news to me. To me, I'm thinking I'm more athletic than a cow is, and I'm gonna get this thing. And I don't think I even touched the cow. I don't think I could. If I paid you $100 to put your hand on a cow and he didn't want you to, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't get it.
Yeah, if you're out in the middle of a field, not gonna happen. Now, we caught cows the other day. We sold, like, you catch the calves and you sell them, like, you know, a couple times a year, so that, because, I mean, there's only enough grass for so many cows. And, so we get them in this big, like, corral, like, pen. And, of course, I'm the one in the pen, you know, slapping cows in the ass and, like, pushing them through the chute to get on the trailer. And they get a little frisky in there. I've seen some people go down in the corral. You gotta be careful. But one of the calves, I guess it weighed about 400 pounds, and it didn't want to go. So I grabbed the fucker by the tail. I'm like, "You're coming with me, buddy." He's like, "Uh-uh." fucking dragging me around by his tail. Like, those things are strong. And every now and then, one of them will kick at you. And, dude, have you ever seen, like, the Bruce Lee movies where he's just like, "Bah!" And he, like, just hits something so hard and fast that you're like, "God damn, that was fast." A cow makes that look like nothing. a cow is like,
you blink and you miss it.
Yeah. This hoof comes at you, and the end of it is a hoof. You know, a hoof is made out of like specialized skin, but still, it's almost as hard.
Basically,
as a
fingernail.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a fucking rock, and you know, depending on how big the cow is, it might be as big as your fist, or bigger, or twice as big. And that thing's coming at you at 100 miles an hour at least, and it's just like, wah-gah! And if that thing ever hits
4,000 pounds
up.
Of force.
Yeah.
Have you been hit by a cow? Have you ever been kicked?
I mean, kicked by like calves, like, and it's like it feels like I don't know. It feels like I would equate it to getting hit by a hammer.
Did you ever try to ride a horse that wasn't broken?
No.
Oh, they put me on a horse that wasn't broken once. So look, I am not an accomplished horseback rider. We used to go to the dude ranch every year and ride the horses for like a week straight through the woods, and we could gallop and trot and do that. But there's nothing accomplished about me. There was a horse that wasn't broken, and I'm like 13 years old, right? I'm not old. Like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And they asked me if I wanted to ride it, and I was like, yes. Do you know how to ride a horse? Yes, I do. Are you good at it? Yes, I am. So they put me on this horse, and that thing started jumping in the air and bucking, and I'm grabbing. They had a saddle on it, right? So I grabbed the horn. And apparently grabbing the horn while a horse bucks is very much like punching yourself in the balls. So I do this a couple of times, and then I go flying off the side, and I land on it. And they're like, you know, when you fall off a horse, you have to get right back on. And I'm like, no, you don't.
You don't.
That's not
when it throws you 30 feet in the opposite direction.
Yeah. And
by the way, when you're doing this, I got a horse story.
That's the end of mine. I'm finished there.
Okay.
Get back on.
All right. So when my sister was little, I'm trying to think exactly how old she was. I was in the seventh grade. I was homeschooled between for seventh and eighth grade. Get that out of the way. I should have been in the seventh grade. So she's 2 years. She was in the fifth grade. Whatever, however old that makes her. She was going to go to this horse camp where you ride horses and you know. You eat lunch there, and it's a bunch of kids hanging out and having fun riding horses and learning how to ride horses. Well, we went to drop her off, and I was like, this shit looked like fun. I want to ride horses, so I went to the horse camp too. So, you know, I liked it and everything, but she loved it. She's like, Dad, I got to have a horse. I got to have a horse. So went on, and a couple months later, Dad's like, all right, I'll get you a horse. So he gets her this horse named Dandy, and Dandy is a full-grown, like, purebred, beautiful fucking horse, supposedly trained well. All right, so
what kind of horse is it? Do you know?
I don't know. It was quite right. Expensive. I'll say it that.
Looked like a cowboy's horse, yeah, normal horse.
Clint Eastwood should have been riding this thing. It was beautiful, and so she's riding the horse, you know, having fun on the horse, and you know everything's going well. You know, you feed it sugar cubes and carrots and shit. It loves it, and all of a sudden she rides it about 200 yards away from us, and then she turns it around and starts coming back to us. About halfway back to us, Dandy decided that he didn't like that little girl on his back at all. And he goes into fucking Bronco mode. I'm talking, this shit looked like something in the rodeo. He's jumping like 3 feet off the ground and bucking. And Kelly goes flying. Falls on the ground, knocks the wind out of her. She's laying there gasping for breath. Well, there's only one thing to do now.
Time to get the gun.
My God. Yeah, this horse. I'm so glad I'm not Kyle's horse at this point.
Hey, Dandy, you want an apple? Well, that apple was stuck on the end of an SKS, my friends.
Did she want the horse dead?
No, but Dad did.
Did he really shoot the horse in the face with an. Like, you're being facetious at this point. That's not how he put the horse down.
He put an apple on the end of the SKS and waited until the horse went to bite it, and just before it bit it, he shot.
I'm surprised you didn't punch it to death.
Get on the back of that thing, rear naked, choke it to down. Someone in the... I try not to talk about the stream, but I keep an eye on it. And somebody wrote, boom, headshot!
Oh, God. I was thinking about the same thing. I'm like, yeah, I put an apple in the end of a bayonet. Go try to feed it to Dandy.
That reminds me. I think I'll get some bayonet footage in one of my next videos. I gotta get the bayonet out and have some fun with that. Oh, anybody want to see a pumpkin get bayoneted?
Any horse or cow stories, Josh?
When I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, but I didn't really do much with the farm. I just kind of sat back and let my two brothers and my dad take care of all the shit. Well, one day, one of my friends was like from high school was like, "Hey, let's go cow tipping," and I'm like, "Okay." Then I found out about 3 hours later that cows don't sleep standing up.
did they drive away?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I actually gave away this secret on the podcast once before. There's no such thing as cow tipping. Cows don't sleep standing up, and if they are standing up, you can't catch them, you can't push them over. Cow tipping is a joke that country people play on city people. They say they drive them out to the field, say they're going to go cow tipping, and then they drive away, leaving you there. That's what
cow tipping is. Yeah, and, you know, I felt so stupid afterwards because, I mean, I literally grew up on a farm with cows. You know, all that shit. I just never paid attention to them after the sun went down, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I had no idea they didn't sleep standing up.
They don't sleep very much at all.
If you go to YouTube and try and, like, find some cow tipping footage, you won't. There's no cow tipping footage on Earth. Like, no one's goes to cow tipping.
Whoa, is that a challenge?
I'm about to say, I can bring a rope out and hit him around his friggin' neck.
No. I'll tip a cow for real.
How are you going to tip a cow for real?
If you sneak up on it and you really put your shoulder into it, I can take down a 400-pound calf.
No, you can't. No.
Absolutely.
We want an 800-pound heifer.
Is this thing in the field?
Yeah.
I couldn't even touch a cow.
I'll go ninja mode on that motherfucker. I got a ghillie suit.
Kyle's going to be laying in there footage in of the that. Field.
Dude, ghillie suit. The store made ghillie suits don't count as ghillie suits.
I bought the kit. I made it myself.
Oh. You don't need me to pay you $100 to sneak up on a cow in a ghillie suit, because you'll make $900 off YouTube on a video like that.
That'd be cool to see a camera on a tripod sitting out there, and you got Kyle laying in the field on his belly, waiting for a cow to come by.
You just see the bush moving forward 6 inches at a time.
The three of us have to get together at some point.
Shit right before
we can go hunting this fall, and Wings. Wait. I will videotape you doing a tour of all your favorite roosters. And give you the footage.
Here's what I was thinking, Woody. I thought it'd be funny if you were doing a video update, and this is going to ruin it for like the people listening to the thing, but you would be doing like a video update sitting on your couch, and I would like, all of a sudden, I would stand up from behind the couch with a knife, look at you and raise it, and then just be like, nah, then lower back down, and you would never even like mention it or anything. That would just be the end of the video. You'd be like, well, I hope you guys understand what's going on, and I hope you guys continue to enjoy the videos. Have a nice day. And you know, the video goes off, and it's never mentioned that I was there.
Dude, I would love that. Yeah, we have to get together in real life at one point.
I'm down.
We're going to do a fundraiser for Huppet Gaming.
Fundraiser?
Yeah, like get together and do something, like help, like, I don't know, like feed people or something.
Let's do a fundraiser for us and feed ourselves.
No, just try to get Huppet Gaming on the news. You know, like
there's plans
like
a, for like that,
a,
man.
Like a Good Samaritan type thing to kind of get the local news' attention to try to get us out there on a broader scale.
You could put on a Huppet t-shirt and go on a shooting rampage.
We have contacts in the New York Times. We're going to try and get another article up.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah.
We guarantee that you'll win the next game contest if you go on a shooting rampage with a Huppet Gaming t-shirt.
If you ever get out of solitary confinement.
If you go on a shooting rampage with a Huppet Gaming t-shirt, you get a free copy of Black Ops.
I'll say this. Anyone who can get on the evening news wearing a Huppet t-shirt and screaming Huppet on the evening news now, $500.
We're talking about Fox News, too. Something that's something that's broadcast, you know, worldwide. CNN, Fox News.
Yeah, you got
shit.
What about like Good Morning America?
Yeah, go to Good Morning America while they're broadcasting live. Go to like
one of those losers that stands outside.
Streak with a Huppet Gaming t-shirt on, no bottom.
Yeah.
Or what if you just like streak naked with Huppet Gaming like on with body paint?
That'd be awesome.
Dude, how awesome would
I wouldn't watch that shit.
The next guy that like, you know, all these YouTubers are selling t-shirts now. You know, a lot of guys have done this. How awesome would it be if some guy, like, wore his t-shirt but had nothing else? Like, he just didn't even mention it. Just, like, put the fuzzy over his lower half and just, like, yeah, these are the t-shirts I'm selling them. I hope you like them. Meanwhile, he's there, you know, half naked, with his with his junk blurred out. Never makes any joke about it. Like, no reference whatsoever.
I was like, yeah, so you guys wanted to see a video blog, right?
Dude, I'm so that's done. That is done. And you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna make the blur like incredibly long, like down to my knees.
The old Borat blur.
Oh, you know who? Shucks, I don't even want to say it because the joke is over and etc. But there's a guy on YouTube.
Just a tiny, tiny blur.
No. He should do the opposite. He should, like, you know, redeem himself and take that blur down to his ankles and be like, "Yeah, what you've heard isn't true."
Have him put the paper mache cock on, huh? So you can see something swinging in the blur.
Right. Just have the blur like wag back and forth. That'd be funny.
Dude, I'm not gonna pay you before you do it. You gotta do it, then I'll pay you. What are you thinking?
Kyle, we don't talk to the stream. It turns out that doesn't make a good podcast. Yeah.
Someone was trying to give me their PayPal and have me pay them money to do some kind of publicity stunt.
Right. So I had this is a silly topic, but one of my subs asked for it. How do you feel about ratings?
How do I feel about? I don't get enough of them motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to not care about ratings at all. They were really positive. Sometimes I briefly look at my ratio, but I get a lot of rates. I get mostly likes and very few dislikes. And it was like, yeah, it's cool. But lately I've learned how much ratings can help your channel. Like, you know, people discover your channel through highly rated videos. And now I've come to hope that, like, I would love it if I had this agreement with my subscribers. Like, all right, tell you what, I'll make content, you provide ratings. All I ask is to click the like, and it means so much to me, it helps me so much. And, you know, that can be our contract, you know? I'll make videos,
I mean, like,
you click like. That's the deal we'll have together.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. Like, I mean, this video I just put in the chat box. Go rate that video. If all of you go rate it right now, like the video will explode. If 1,100 of you go rate this video right now, it's awesome. Video will explode.
Well, I tell you what, I rate every single one of your guys' videos when I get on there and I watch them.
It means the world to us. Like, I used to be like, you know, look, guys, I don't need anything from you. Now, like, a rating would help so much. I think a lot of guys watch the video.
They didn't have to be a like. It'd be a dislike.
Yeah. Throw that shit down. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, Wings, I'm not going to lie, man. I've disliked some of your videos.
I don't give a shit.
Oh, I know. I just figured I'd just be get my one chance to be honest with you.
I can give two shits in the fuck.
I know.
But yeah, so how do we feel about ratings? Ratings are the lifeblood of a YouTube channel. You know, if you like your commentator and you want him to have any kind of success, click on like for him, and it really means a lot to us. So someone asked me to talk about it.
Wow, you guys really did go rate the video. Nice job.
Freaking Kyle.
I got 668 videos I need 10,000 likes on by tomorrow. Get to work.
And I'll say this because a lot of people don't know it, and I won't put it in the stream or anything, but there's a playlist at the top right in the related videos. If you click that, then it plays all the videos, and I guarantee, like, even if you're a big fan, you probably haven't seen all the videos. And I hate to toot my own horn here, but there's not a video in that playlist that if I hadn't seen it myself, I would not love to see. Those are all funny as fucking shit. Those RL videos, I love those.
So who got you into YouTube commentating?
G7 Taylor.
G7 Taylor? I don't know him.
G7 Taylor.
Who's that?
He's my buddy.
Oh, okay. He's a guy that you got, like, you know, in real life? Or?
No, we originally met on Call of Duty World at War. Mm-hmm. And we became friends before either one of us had a YouTube channel. And basically, he ended up buying a Dazzle. And he started doing commentary. Well, yes, he just put gameplay up to begin with. And I thought it was so cool. And he ended up making a montage. I'm like, sweet, I'm in a montage. He's like, yeah, this is neat. And he's like, so I end up getting a Dazzle. And I realized I can't play in HD with it. So I returned that shit. And well, a little bit later, I get my idea to start doing gun information, where he starts putting guns out in the videos, and I help him with an intro.
Rifleman's Creed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then basically, Hutch likes his gun information videos and gives him a shout-out, which he gives him about 10,000 subscribers. He actually gave him two shout-outs, Hutch did.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a long time ago. I remember he did a Barrett 50 cal on Backlot.
Yeah, he also did it in Arisaka.
Yeah, and, yeah, he did. Yeah. Long time ago.
What happens, I went and bought an HD PVR, and basically I did one video, and I sent it to him, and I realized how much work it was, and I said, man, I don't really want to do this no more, because I had a good paying job at the time. So basically, he went ahead and did it. He put commentary over it and put it on his channel, and he ended up giving me 500 some subscribers. And I'm like, damn, now I got to make videos. Because there's 500, because I was like, man, there's 500 people wanting to see shit from me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was letting people down at this point. So I was like, sure, I'll make some videos. I started making videos. About 4 or 5 months later, I had amassed about 1,000 subscribers. And it was about time for Modern Warfare 2 to drop. And this is the point where C-Nanners just got a shout-out from
Hutch. He got a bunch of them around the same time. Beyond gave him one, too. That's how I found him.
Yeah, because I was ahead of C-Nanners for all that time until that. Because me and C-Nanners were like kind of pen pals. Because we were the only two World at War commentators. Yeah, but this is doing the COD 4 thing. You know, they had that backlash. Well, World at War sucked. You know, the whole nine on YouTube. And then basically Modern Warfare 2 came out, and I started knocking out 4 or 5 videos a day. And I started doing the Rifleman's Cree thing. I started, you know, basically people took notice because I was putting up good gameplay, consistent gameplay. And I was giving out tips that actually worked. And I built it up to around 7,000 or so. And then basically I said something bad about Hutch. Called him an amateur sniper.
I remember that. He took
offense to that.
But then you did a dual con with him.
And then we did a dual con because people were flagging videos at the time. And I'm like, dude, we got to stop this right now before we lose our channel. So we decided to do a dual con and kind of smooth the air out. And Hutch only had about 22,000 subs when I did a dual con with him. He didn't have as big as a channel he had now because everybody thinks that he made my channel.
Mm-hmm.
He had about 22,000, and I got about 3,000 of those, so it knocked me up to 10. And then once you get about 10,000 subscribers, your channel starts building itself. But at least back in the day, because the ratios now are way higher than they used to be, because this was before Machinima or anything like that, where really big exposure happened. And then I slowly built up. And at about 30,000 subs, I did a dual con with Woody's Gamertag.
No, it was a lot less than 30. I want to say it was like 14 or 16, something like that. Okay.
Might have been 16,000.
Yeah.
And I know I shot up to 50 after that.
I only had 38 subs at the time, but they were really influential. And it helped Wings a lot. That's how I remember it.
And you know, shortly after that, I did that dual con with FPS Kyle shortly after Woody.
Nope, I was before.
You were before?
You? Yep. So I did. You saw me. You saw my video that was on the Moody Sweets channel, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first guy I ever watched was called J.A. Griff, and he was a beast at the single player COD 4, which I had played before the multiplayer in an effort to sort of, you know, learn the controls and figure out what I was doing. And this guy could beat no fighting in the war room, like just sprinting around like it was no problem. You know, he would just noob tube those two guys on the side, and he was so good at it. I watched his video like as a, you know, how to do it type thing repeatedly. And I almost paid him to do it. I was like, recover my gamer tag. I can't beat this thing. It took me like 250 tries to beat that level. But I did end up doing it on my own. Then I watched his multiplayer stuff. And then, like, knowing the existence of multiplayer stuff, that's when I found, you know, some of the other big guys, like Hutch, Beyond, X-Cal, etc. Pyro Puncher was the early one. And that's how I got started.
Yeah, I started with, I think I was watching, I want to say Hutch's videos, watching him doing the Arisaka free-for-alls in World at War. And I was playing World at War at the time. And I guess, you know, C-Nanners not too long after when everybody gave him shout-outs and stuff, and he just exploded overnight. Mm-hmm. And I think in Zergriz, then Hutch that I subscribed to in that order. And I don't know. After that, like, I just kind of, like, realized that there's a whole group of people who did it, and I started subscribing to a lot of people. I remember when the whole thing with, like, Wings and Hutch was going on, I was like, let me see what this guy's videos are like. And Wings is, like, camping in this little building with Scrambler ACR on underpass. And I'm like, what is he doing? He's not going to leave the building? He's going to... I'm like, they watch this? He's going to stay in there the whole time?
One thing about Wings, man, is, like, he's like, this is how I play. If you don't like how I play, bite me. This is a way. This is a successful method of playing the game. And I'm not interested in your 360 no-scopes. That's not a successful way. And other guys are like, no, this is what entertaining gameplay looks like. Wings is like, bite, you're entertaining. This is how you win. This is how you get a 5KD. This is how you know you do it.
I set out to put videos out that I wanted to see. I didn't want to see a fucking montage. I got tired of that about 2 weeks after CSF Taylor put out his first one. I wanted to see shit that helped me get better. I want to see the lines of sight that you use. Yep. Like, give me the lines of sight. I want to know. I want to use the lines of sight too.
I look forward to your lines of sight video. You did one on Rundown that may have been the best line of sight video I've ever seen anyone put out anywhere. Like, it was outstanding. And you know, Black Ops is going to come out, and I hope you show us again, man, because that was pretty good.
Oh, man, I could give you lines of sight video of Modern Warfare 2. People would never see it. Like, oh, this next video I'm about to put up tonight, you're gonna love some of the lines of sight I got on this Medal of Honor game.
Yeah, I might. Yeah, that would really be helpful. What I really want in that,
I started giving call out nicknames for people in as well. Like, oh, I got Thunder's Humvee. I got Q's Corner.
That's one thing. Medal of Honor somehow. No, look, I only have about 6 hours in the multiplayer, so my opinion might change. It just doesn't seem like you know, call out for friendly. Call outs. Yeah, thank you. Call out friendly. That's what I want. In Modern
Warfare,
have
distinguishing landmarks. Yes.
In Modern Warfare, a lot of the buildings are named. You know, they have like barbershop poles on them, and you know, or ice cream shop, or like these things all are distinguished, and you can kind of tell what the buildings are supposed to be. There's, you know, soda machines and things that are helpful. In Medal of Honor, it's just kind of a bunch of brown hut things, you know, brown mud buildings of one sort or another. And what are you going to say? Like, the small brown mud building? They're all small brown mud buildings. It doesn't lend itself to distinguishing marks and callouts, but maybe I'll observe more as I move along. I don't have that much time in it.
That's where I have problems in, because when I play, Modern Warfare 2, I give callouts, but I don't give buildings. I usually say northwest corner of this. Well, nobody looks at their map, so everybody's like, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah.
You got to explain to them. You got to explain to them where the compass is at, and then their guys where to go.
Yeah. If you look in the bottom right of the screen, you'll see this little thing that moves when you look in all different directions. That's called a compass.
The only time I use the compass really is when I call out the UAV. You know, I'll tell it's towards the south and get some help shooting it down.
Yeah, but like I'm doing shit like people called the thing Thunder's Humvee because he put his first video bashing Medal of Honor sitting behind the Humvee. It's like, I'm gonna call this Thunder's Humvee.
It works. That'd be funny if it became the call out for that, like the MLG call out, Thunder's Humvee.
Because it's gonna be and that part is a big part of that map. Now it's Gemser Town, the big square one. It's got like a trench going down the middle with a bridge going down the center of it. It's the one I told you that if we get stuck on this one side, we'll never win.
Oh, the one that's really susceptible to mortar strikes. It's brown, right? As opposed to gray, right? The maps are brown and gray. Yeah. It's a brown. I know the one you're thinking of.
Black Op with hair. If you've got a beta code, send me a message on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm still $100. Put the word out. If you got a code that works, I will hook you up tonight.
Yep. Will I get a commission if I find somebody?
Yes, you will.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm down to pay $100 for a beta.
If you've got a beta code, send the code to one of our YouTubes. It doesn't matter which one of us, because I know some of you hate me, and some of you hate Wings, and some of you hate Woody. Some of them do. I get messages all the time. Need to get rid of that Woody guy.
People do. Yeah, people do.
But it doesn't matter which one of us you send it to. Because we have our ways.
Oh, just so people know, so the beta is closed, right? They're not supposed to play it. But all of us know people who are playing it and have 100% confidence that there are regular people playing the beta right now. And not only do I know them well enough to trust them, and that's as much as I'm going to say, but I'm 100% certain that people are playing this beta that we know.
You already told them you got footage.
Did I say that already?
Yeah.
Bastard.
Well.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't give a blowjob for a beta, no. Kyle.
Whoa.
Wait. So how many naps are in this beta?
How about this? I'll buy you a hooker.
Yeah, that works. So people are playing this beta, and I'm psyched about it. I hope I can get my hands on it and play. If that happens, man, I will play it every night.
Somebody just sent me a beta code.
Hey, look here. I probably won't see a video until Black Ops comes out if I get the beta tonight.
Oh, never mind. That's 1,600 Microsoft points. I'll take that, too.
They just gave you Microsoft points?
Yeah, for a friend request.
Oh, okay.
All right, we got anything on the topics?
I do, but how long are we here?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half, yeah.
Might be time to wrap up. You guys want to cover anything before we let go?
I don't think so. Oh, I need a... My Xbox Live subscription just ran out today, and I don't feel like renewing it. So, anybody wants a friend request, I need a 3-month. Just saying.
Kyle. I'm still looking for Astra Mix Amp.
Oh, wow. I got a medium pure pwned shirt that I'm selling for like $20. Like, they just sent me a medium instead of a large. Can't wear it.
You guys are sick and wrong.
No, I'm willing to pay for the Astra Mix Amp. I just can't find nobody willing to sell one.
All right. Very cool. So a lot of guys are asking for the cool story, bro. I was going to have my wife on and do the whole rundown on my son and what he's like, but we'll have to save that for another podcast. But that'll come up. I sort of talked to my wife about it. We're going to do it and let everyone know what the deal is. So I guess that ends the podcast.
Peace.
Later, guys.
All right.
You see the leprechaun say, yeah.
So,
I gotta turn on my Xbox see if one of these kids came through with my beta code yet.
All right. Hey, I'm going to hang up this call and then call right back just so I can start working the recording and put the podcast together.
Yep.